Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to The Counter Ruck, a brand new rugby podcast brought to you by the Irish Times. My name is Nathan Johns. This podcast is sponsored by Nifty Business, the fleet management specialists. Our thanks to them. You can find out more about what they offer at niftybusiness.ie. Later on, we'll be hearing from Noah McNamara, the backs coach at Bordeaux, working with a number of France's squad, notably Maxime Lucu, the man widely expected to replace Antoine Dupont in the French scrum half jersey. But for now, I'm joined by former Ireland international and current Irish Times columnist, Gordon Darcy. Hi, Gordon.
Good morning.
And Irish Times rugby writer, John O'Sullivan.
Good morning.
It's a bit of an auspicious day for the history of Irish rugby, John. We got our first ever Irish Times rugby podcast over the line.
I think the listeners will be the judge of that. But yes, it's nice to be here and hopefully people will enjoy this.
Gordon, obviously we're here to discuss Friday night. In many ways, it's the final that never was for the World Cup. It's the people's final, I suppose. Everyone was looking forward to a potential France-Ireland showdown in Paris a few months ago. It didn't happen. We're getting it in Marseille on Friday night to open the Six Nations. What are your initial thoughts as we sit here on Monday morning of match week?
Well, obviously, we're here to preview the Six Nations and down in Marseille. But we really have to stop and applaud the women's sevens team.
The champions of HSBC Sevens Perth, Ireland.
Yeah, fantastic.
Like, unbelievable.
Yeah. Brilliant. I mean, when you think it's Olympic year, Paris is coming up to beat the reigning World Series champions at home, basically, and to kind of win a first ever World Series event.
Front page, the Irish Times as well.
Front page, and deservedly so. You know, there's as Lucy Mulhall said afterwards, that there's a lot of them have been soldiering for a long time to get to this peak, if you like, and hopefully it continues and all the way to Paris and the Olympics, and it would be great. And a word too for the men who finished third, won a bronze medal, beat Fiji in the third place playoff. So yeah, a fantastic
but they were
start.
Full value for it as well, which is great.
Fantastic start to the week. Hopefully it will be continued all the way to Friday night in Marseille.
Like, there was almost a little bit of rugby fatigue after the World Cup, because there was such anticipation, and then the two teams you kind of wanted to be in the knockout stages just weren't there. So kind of took a little bit of time to get a bit of interest back into rugby, and the opening of the Champions Cup was good. But I suppose it's really, since the new year, it's been kind of building up towards this, and I got to say, I'm really looking forward to it. Gone down Friday morning doing commentary, co-coms, and actually really, really excited about this match. I think it's an absolute belter of an opener to the Six Nations. Probably the biggest test of both coaching tickets, obviously since the World Cup, since their exit, but I think probably over their kind of last 4 to 6 years, this is the biggest test of both of the coaching tickets. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they come off it.
Ireland have an interesting record, shall we say, coming off the back of World Cups, and more often than not, as has been really well documented, World Cup disappointments. I mentioned this stat to you before we recorded, Gordon, and you very helpfully pointed out, well, actually, in 2004, you did finish second only to a Grand Slam winning France. But since then, every World Cup since the 2003 World Cup, the Six Nations following the next year, Ireland have never finished higher than third. There is a problem with World Cup hangovers, it looks like. Why do you think that is, and do you expect that to change this time around?
Yeah, as long as you leave out the one where we did well. That's that's right. And obviously the one I played in. So
and this is Horgan back inside. He's a real bulldozer. And the try is scored for Gordon Darcy. His first try for his country in a match that may well end in the Triple Crown.
I think Ireland are in a better position going through, and there's consistency of coaching as well. I think one of the things that you look at with those three World Cups where things haven't gone well, there's usually been a change in coaching. Either it was the end of a coach's life cycle, or there was a new one coming in. And I think there's kind of a consistency coming through here, which I think should mitigate a lot of that.
There's a consistency of selection in this Six Nations squad, John. Obviously, there's a significant hole at 10, which I'm sure we'll get onto at some point with Johnny Sexton retiring. But by and large, again, we were just saying that there's no uncapped players in this squad. Pretty much all of the players, bar one or two, were involved in the wider World Cup squad before it started getting trimmed down over the course of the summer. Andy Farrell is being consistent here, but that said, there are still a handful of areas where we're looking at it for Friday night selection-wise, not 100% sure which way he's going to go.
Well, I think, yeah, if you look at it, Ireland won 16 of 17 test matches prior to their defeat to New Zealand in the World Cup. So he has an idea of his best players. You would argue that not a lot has been done to change that pecking order in most positions, and that is reflected in the squad that he's selected for the Six Nations. You'd also look at that in terms of leadership, where he's gone with Peter O'Mahony, a tried and trusted and respected leader amongst the group. So a lot of people like the shiny new things, and there will be a level of disappointment that you don't have shiny new things in this squad. And the critics will say that it's conservative. But if you look at the players and their performance levels, and you ask yourself, well, who deserves to be in the squad that's not in the squad? It would be a very short list, and you can always argue the point over two or three selections. But by and large, he's reflected form. He did a lot of the heavy lifting for his World Cup squad, the World Cup just gone, by giving players debuts 2 years ago, or 2.5, 3 years ago. So it's the start of a new cycle, but he's not thinking of that. He's thinking of defending the Six Nations tournament in which they're Grand Slam champions, and that's his priority. And you have to also look at the players that you need, or the players who can thrive in what will be a very hostile and volatile atmosphere in Marseille.
There's kind of the same overlay in the way we approach rugby in Ireland, in that the Six Nations is what pays, like the international rugby is what pays the majority of the bills, and then it trickles down and we have that lovely system that feeds up to the national team. But we don't have the luxury, we never have had the luxury of thinking 2-3 years out. We have tried it at various times and in different guises, but ultimately it always comes down, we have to win, we have to be competitive in the Six Nations every year. And this is reflective of that. There really isn't anybody challenging the status quo at a provincial level. And I think Andy Farrell and the coaching team have given players game time, or at least training time, and they haven't done enough to shift their view on that player. Say Robert Balogun is a perfect example. Injuries in the back three and not considered. So, you know, whatever they're seeing, you know, week in, week out, it's just obviously not enough to get him in. And he's the guy you could probably look at and go, he's got the absolute high-end pace that could and would trouble any international defences, but just hasn't done enough to shift the coach's opinion on it. I think that's probably, you know, there could be three or four players, five or six maybe, that you could fit into that bracket. So ultimately, you're kind of beholden to what's coming through at a provincial level.
One name that is probably worth mentioning that has forced his way in, and it's unfortunate that he got injured when he did, is Tom Ahern. Obviously was playing very well for Munster in that six jersey. Got a head injury against Northampton, meant Cian Prendergast came into the squad. He was a training player rather than a fully fledged squad member, so it remains to be seen whether he'll come back in when he recovers from his head injury. But I think, yeah, but like you said, the list is very short of players like that who've taken that step. While we're on the subject of wings, I want you both to give me who starts in the 14 jersey ahead of Hansen. Obviously O'Brien probably would have, he's injured. We're assuming James Lowe has shown in the two Champions Cup matches recently that he's back to full fitness. He'll start on the left wing. Hugo Keenan, a fullback. Who's in that 14 jersey?
I think it'll be Calvin Nash. I think he's probably done enough in Munster's games to warrant a go. He's been consistently good for Munster. When you watch him play, you just look at a player who's maximising his talent. You look at a player who understands his role. You look at a player who has played in other positions. And you look at a player who's delivering on a consistent basis. And I think for all of those reasons, I think he will be given an opportunity. Obviously, the discussion point is whether Jordan Larmour, who's been there before, gets another opportunity, or whether they, you know, there has been talk of moving Gary Ringrose out to the wing and playing Bundy Aki and Robbie Henshaw as a midfield partnership. But it would be unlikely, I think, for Andy Farrell to look at two fixes to one problem. And when I say problem, to one area of the team where you're picking a player. So for me, I think he will pick Calvin Nash.
Yeah, Calvin Nash. Jordan is too heavy on one side of the ball, brilliant going forward, but probably not as consistent in the air and defending. And like Stockdale, you know, was tentative green shoots, and then obviously not a great last performance, and would have to shift to the right wing. You know, has he ever played there before? So the only out and out right winger in the squad is Calvin Nash. So it makes sense that he would go, and he had a pretty good outing on the road down in Toulon. Just deserves a shot.
I agree on the Larmour point. I think while he's probably, you know, he's crossed more for Leinster this season, and he looks to be back in form that way, I think he's not the type of messy winger that an Andy Farrell type likes, the coming in off his wing, getting involved, the James Lomax Hansen type. I would argue Nash isn't necessarily either, which is the only reason in the back of my mind there is the will he just, for a big game against France, play Ringrose on the wing because he'll be more likely to come in and get involved. But I probably would agree it's most likely to be Nash, but there is just that nagging.
I gotta say, if you shift Gary Ringrose out to the wing, just send the three wingers you have home.
There is that, and that's a very good point. There is that message there that
absolutely, yeah,
you have to trust. So Calvin Nash went down on the Emerging Ireland tour, and I know that they were the management team were impressed, coaching team were impressed by him down there. And he took his opportunity. And it's all about having the aptitude as well as the talent when you get opportunities. And Gordon spoke about Rob Balakoon before. If you look at the raw material there as a player, the top end pace, good aerially, very, you know, good footwork, all that sort of stuff, then there's something else that isn't there that the coaching team feel that is lacking currently in his game.
And that has been communicated to him by his lack of selection.
Correct. So in those circumstances, you look at it and you say, Calvin Nash has probably been the most consistent over a period. If you want to use a cliche, he's the next cab off the rank. And why would you make two changes to find a solution to a selection issue?
So that sounds like, from your point of view, pretty open and shut. Is Crowley at 10 fall into that category as well?
Definitely. Without a shadow of a doubt, he'll be the choice at 10.
Sounds like, I think before the Six Nations squad was announced, I think there were a few calls for someone like Ryan Baird to be promoted into the starting team. I suspect the Omani captaincy decision means that won't happen. Omani will start at 6. The other area then is second row.
Before we go into second row, I think the Peter Romani thing, I think, is also linked to the Jack Crowley thing, and into having Peter Romani as captain is really important for me. So you do need a central figure in that. And sometimes people can say the captaincy thing has been, you know, maybe a little bit diluted in the importance of it. It actually is important in the context of the wider squad and how they, you know, how they gel together. And there does need to be that one person, that alpha male, that person who everybody looks to. I don't think there is another captain, leader, a go-to person in that squad at the moment. I think they can find that over the next 12, 24 months. But if you're going to have Jack Crowley in there, he needs to focus on being a number 10. And if that's Kieran Frawley or if it was Harry Byrne, whoever is in there, they need to focus on being the number 10. And you need somebody like Peter Romani who is thinking and feeling the way through the game. So you can, that little, even though they're not particularly young players, they're young on experience. So now you have to put somebody like Peter Romani in beside a young 10 like that you're going, we need you to steer the ship. So I think that for me fits and looks quite natural.
Well, that's a really good point as well on the leadership point, and equally the point about they're good giving somebody 6 to 12 months to step up, to be that leadership figure, whether it's Gary Ringrose, whether it's James Ryan, whoever it is. because it's, as things stand, Peter Mahoney doesn't have a contract for next season and he doesn't know where he's playing his rugby. And if he is playing in Ireland, who's paying the check, whether it's the RFU, Munster or both? So, yeah, somebody might have to step up within 6 months.
I think it's not a conscious thought. I think, like, Peter Mahoney won't go to bed on Thursday night wondering how Friday's going to go or how he's going to captain the team. He's surrounded by senior players and they have that senior leadership group, but he's got that. He's been there. He's done it. He's captained teams. It's very important that it doesn't become a conscious thought. Or when I say a conscious thought, it's important that you're comfortable with the role. He's been comfortable with the role. He's captained teams all the way up. He's captained Ireland. He's captained the Lions. He understands the dynamic. He's very much, kind of do as I do as much as do as I say. And Gordon's point about Jack Crowley is that because he plays with him and understands him and has got to see him develop over the last 18 months, 2 years, he'll understand body language-wise whether Jack, how Jack is feeling during a game, whether it's time, will we go to the corner, will we take a shot at goal? All those things are really important, that you have the experience of captaincy to understand when you have a less experienced player, we'll say, which Jack is in that in test environment, that you understand, you can look at him, and because if you ask somebody something, they'll often tell you what you want to hear. But if you've experienced as a captain, you look at somebody, you look at the body language, you see, you understand how they're feeling. That makes a huge difference. You don't have to ask the question.
Yeah, like it ebbs and flows in every player's career. So there's natural leaders that, and there's manufacturers leaders and there's captains and things like that. Right, so Paul O'Connell was always the guy that, just a natural leader right the way through from, we played underage and everything coming through. But he knew what to do and what to say at various different times. The bit that Peter does is, he accepts that, I suppose, that role where if things aren't going perfectly on Friday night, which they're not going to go perfectly, that's when he either says something or does something. And that might be a case of going off the, having the confidence to go off what the game sheet says and saying, we're going to keep it tight or we're going to move to a kicking game. If he sees Jack or whoever's in the position just stutter a tiny bit, that's when it's the arm around the shoulder. That's the kind of intangible role that the captaincy plays, which is really important. So by Jack Crowley being in that environment with Peter, and he talked about over the weekend when he was Johnny Sexton's T-boy, that he was soaking up all those, 2 minutes while he was on the pitch in the test environment that he was there. So all those, he's watching Sexton, spending time with him, trying to draw on all his experience so that when it comes to him, that he gets, he has all these little moments maybe processed in the head and now has that, not a comfort blanket, but has that experience of a warrior and a captain on the pitch as well.
Does a lack of experience, given that we've just talked about the importance of it with O'Mahony in that back row, does that mean, despite his good run of form, someone like a Joe McCarthy has not quite forced his way into a starting role? I mean, I personally would look at what he did in France against La Rochelle, look what he did against Leicester, against one of the English second rows in Ollie Chessum, and go, I think he's that type of player who he's not quite has to be in the team, but I personally would think he's not far off.
You can't coach a guy to be big and to be strong.
Exactly.
And to be, what did Mike Ross describe him as? He's a big, ignorant lad. I think you would be past, he is past the impact player role now for me. I think he is an 80-minute wrecking ball. And I don't know how you make that work. I think we would have less chance of winning if he's an impact player on the bench.
I take a slightly different view. I think that he is, I love him. I love the way he plays the game and I think he adds massive value, but he is still learning on the discipline side of things not to concede penalties. And on Friday night in Marseille, in that atmosphere, you have to be whiter than white in terms of your, when to leave it, when not to go in, when, you have to make good decisions, basically.
What's he been like in his last two games? He's been good, and discipline-wise, I think that is potential perception. I think if you take over his, say, 20 games or 30 games that he has, there would definitely be quite a high penalty count there. But I think in the last post-World Cup, I think he has been better.
Perception is vitally important because it depends. If that perception is shared by the gentleman with the whistle. I mean, we talk about perception with scrums a lot as well, and how, for example, Andrew Porter is developing a little bit of a reputation at scrum time, and there's a referee perception. We know there's a referee perception around him and giving away penalties.
I look at it and I think it's not like, you don't look at Joe McCarthy in isolation or the decision to select him or not select him in isolation. You look at the alternatives or the players who are in contention. I think James Ryan is back approaching his best form. I think he's played his way onto the team, and I think Tadhg Byrne is first choice of the locks. If you look at his performances this year for Munster, I think if you look at the work that he does in the breakdown and you think about how you want to stop France, like the other thing with France is you've got to slow down their breakdown ball.
Tadhg Byrne comes into it.
Exactly. And he's so good. And his decision-making in that environment is so good at knowing when to go for the poach and when to stay off. A lot of the time he gets that right. That's very important. So looking at the gameplay, if you like, for Marseille on Friday night, I think it's James Ryan and Tadhg Byrne in the second row. That would be I believe will happen.
With McCarthy on the bench.
It's tough.
Henderson misses out.
Yeah, Ian Henderson misses out. We're also looking at, I think also to point out, we're looking at the 20 jersey as well here. So whatever way you decide on the three second rows that we've mentioned, whatever variation on those, who starts and who's on the bench, you're also looking at the 20 jersey, and that's going to be pretty competitive.
It's Ryan Baird, surely, no? As opposed to, I'd have him ahead of Cohen.
Yeah, you have a lot of players that start playing in the same positions now.
Yeah,
you know, you've an awful lot of cover for six then. You've got three players who could technically cover six. So it would be very interesting to see.
Well, that's the decision of, do you go best player available or do you go cover strategically, who covers as many positions as possible?
Yeah, but it comes into
you're looking at Jack Conan. I mean, it's Jack Conan or Ryan Baird. So you're looking at whether you want to cover eight, whether you've enough. You can move Tadhg Byrne to six. And you can bring in another second row, and whether you need a back row specialist or a number eight, if you like. So that's the decision for Andy Farrell, and he will decide. There's no doubt that Ryan Baird has been absolutely superb, that he's moderated or changed his game a little bit to do some of the grunt work. He chases kickoffs better than anybody else. He gets up in the air. He's a real threat on opposition ball.
He's unpredictable as well.
Yeah, and he's a superb athlete. That's the other thing.
The other thing he's massively worked on is his defensive line-out has been excellent. In recent weeks, forward and center. They didn't go very well when he called the line out against Stade Francais. A few issues there, but defensively he's been really, really good, I think. Right, we're going to talk about France after the break when we've got Noel McNamara, attack coach at Bordeaux, coming on. But just very quickly before we do that, is this Six Nations following the pattern of the previous couple, where it tends to look like it's going to be a two-horse race between France and Ireland, and the winner on Friday night is the favourite for the championship? Or do you think, for example, Ireland having to go to Twickenham, is that a bigger worry than it has been in previous years?
Yeah, I'm deciding now, will I just get in my own way and be... Borthwick has... Like, they've picked a squad, you're kind of going, they should be dangerous. It's just a question of, will they actually find a way to get through to the players? Because, you know, if they continue with the kind of percentage rugby that Borthwick has done, either with Leicester and with England, I think the game has moved on considerably from that. But going to England is never easy. I think sometimes you get them at a weak time or transitional time, and you can, you know, get
Victory. Look at the match last year in Dublin. Like, it took a sending off to change the course of the game. So, you know, it's, when you look at it from that perspective, it wasn't as if Ireland were absolutely rampant against England.
Yeah, but that's that reductive type of rugby that England were playing.
And then they will make it difficult. Like, every collision point, scrum, every chance they get, they'll make it difficult. They're big men and they have some talent in the back line. Injuries, that's round four of the Six Nations, so it's a long way down the road. You're kind of saying to yourself, it'll be interesting to see how the teams line out. That will inform you a little bit better. In a general sense, England have beef up front, and they have players if they pick the right team and get it right in terms of the way they play the game. If you look at the others, Ireland will be happy. It's Italy, Scotland, Wales.
The other thing with England, though, is they have halfbacks that are very comfortable switching to a kicking game. So they can yeah. run the ball. If they get, it's like rugby is essentially simple. You get good, quick ball over the gain line, it's really hard to defend against. But when you're shifting to that kicking game, not everybody, we're not great at a kicking game with Ireland. We don't have a particularly good kicking game anymore. We're okay, but wouldn't be a strong point.
Right then. In a sentence or two, give me a prediction for Friday night and why.
I'm just going to stick my finger out the window and see what the weather is. I would say Ireland are the more settled team. A lot will depend on how Ireland try and manage the game. If they can get the same sort of quality of ruck ball, then Ireland have a chance to beat France in Marseille. If the French slow down Ireland ball, then I think that they have the capacity to cause problems for Ireland at the breakdown, for forcing Ireland into kicking. And if Ireland kick loosely, then France are going to be in clover, as they would say.
France will win. I don't think Ireland will be too close on it. I don't think that's an issue. What we will see from Ireland is enough to still challenge for the Six Nations. But I think there's such a vacuum created by players that have by our player that's stood down. I think this will be, you know, a bridge too far for them. I think probably we will see enough from Ireland to go, you know, the future's bright. There'll be good attacking aspects, but I just think away, down in Marseille, new stadium, all that, I think will just, France will just be a little bit too, either too powerful or just too accurate for us. I think we'll score tries, we'll be competitive, but ultimately we'll fade away. I don't see that being a big issue, because there'll be enough from it for us to build on to into Italy with a view to going into Twickenham and looking to get a win on the road.
I'm going to change my mind, Ireland. No, I'm joking.
Right, well, that's somewhat positive note. We're going to take a break. Afterwards, we'll be talking to today's guest, Noel McNamara, the Clare man coaching at Bordeaux, the top 14 side which is all but certain to provide the starting halfbacks for France in Friday's Six Nations opener.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome back to The Counter Ruck with me, Nathan Johns. Gordon has left, but John O'Sullivan is still here. A reminder that if you want to get in touch with any questions or topic suggestions for future episodes, please drop us an email at rugbypod@irishtimes.com. Now, as you heard at the start of today's episode, our guest is Noel McNamara, currently the attack coach at top 14 side Bordeaux Bègles. Noel has an extensive rugby CV, really, having coached in Glenstall Abbey and Clongowes in Ireland. He progressed onto the Leinster Academy and was the Ireland under-20s head coach, winning a Grand Slam in 2019. And of course, given that timeline, he's worked with quite a few members of the current senior squad going into this Six Nations. Noel then progressed onto Durban, where he coached the Sharks in the URC. And now, of course, he is with Bordeaux, who are flying high, third in the top 14, and were arguably one of the teams of the pool stages of the Champions Cup. The reason why we want to talk to Noel today is because, well, being with Bordeaux, he's got six members of his backline in the current French squad ahead of Friday night's Six Nations opener. But arguably more importantly, he has coached extensively the man we think who is going to replace Antoine Dupont in the French backline, Maxime Lucu. Noel, you did an interview with John a couple of months ago, and the takeaway line for me actually was, you said, you tell your players to make their passion your obsession. You clearly are both passionate and obsessive about rugby, but are you so to the extent that you actually managed to catch your old school Clongowes in their defeat to Belvedere yesterday in the Senior Cup?
No, No, I didn't. I didn't see the defeat. Unfortunately, I did. I did keep abreast of the result. All right, and so it was some late drama, an incredible conversion from the left hand side by the Belvedere number 12. But obviously disappointed for the boys and the people involved. But equally know that they will have taken an awful lot from the experience. So yeah, not enough to. It was my daughter's 10th birthday yesterday, so I couldn't miss that for a school's cup game that I'm not involved in.
That's fair enough. Could you, just in relation to obviously Friday night's match between France and Ireland in Marseille, you have six players in the back line, in the French back line, in the extended squad. One of those is Maxime Lucu. Can you talk to us a little bit about what he's like as a person? Just give us an insight into him. He's obviously replacing Antoine Dupont. He's done so before when Dupont was injured. But what he's like as a person and a character?
You know, the thing that's always said about Maxime is he's not Antoine Dupont. And I think that's a pretty straightforward statement. I don't think anybody is. In terms of Maxime the person, he's an incredible person. He's been absolutely fantastic for us. And obviously, it's been a short period that I've been involved with him. Initially when I started here, he was obviously away at the World Cup with France. He returned back. He was appointed as a captain this season at Bordeaux and has done an absolutely fantastic job in that role. And you know, really, he's just an outstanding rugby player. It can't be said, well, he's not Dupont, but he's an outstanding rugby player in his own right. You know, in terms of his understanding of the game, his leadership skills, his core skills are absolutely fantastic. And he's probably been one of the main drivers of the team over the last number of weeks and the run of games where we've been pretty successful. So I think in terms of his selection, I think it's a no-brainer. You know, I would expect to see him and Matthew Jellibert at 9 and 10 on Friday night. And for the general public that maybe are expecting to see Antoine Dupont, that's obviously not what you will see. But what you will see is an outstanding rugby player who, will run the game in his own way, manages the game really, really well. He's an absolutely fantastic kicker off both feet, which, you know, again, is something that's taken for granted over here in France, but it's not necessarily something that everybody can do. They talk here a little bit about the number of lines that they kick across. So if you're inside the 22, if you can cross the 22, cross the 10, cross the halfway and cross the sideline, then you've crossed four lines. Well, the number of times that Maxime Lucu will cross four lines off both feet is absolutely incredible. I think we saw as well, we played Clermont away just before the resumption of Europe. And in that game, he demonstrated some other sides of his game as well. You know, there was some transition opportunities in early in the game inside our own half where he saw the space and he was able to take it as well. So ultimately, we're talking about a player who's probably in his prime, who has maybe lived a little bit in the shadow of Dupont, but is in his own right is an absolutely outstanding rugby player.
You say he's not Dupont, which obviously goes without saying, but the two things you talked about there, kicking off both feet and transition and support play, and I actually watched that Clermont game, and it was notable how Dupont-like Maxime was with his support lines and how he both scored up tries and finished off line breaks and created extra opportunities for players with that type of plays. When you're talking about two-footed kicking and support lines, you're not talking about a player like Dupont.
Because Dupont has the ability to do things that, physically, there's obviously been some incredible moments, not least that one with Matt Canson. And he regularly does that week in, week out.
Keenan for Hansen. Where's the ball going to finish up? In the hands of Hansen.
An unbelievable tackle.
Oh, the defence by France is beyond heroic.
He has a tendency to... Yeah, Dupont to force the game, I guess, and bend it a little bit to his own will. So I think that's probably the major difference. I think with how France play, and it's probably been well documented at this stage in terms of, you know, they are a team that plays out of possession quite a lot. They are a team that tends to, if we say that Ireland are a possession team that like to keep the ball and like to force the defence into making decisions, France are probably the opposite of that. So they tend to rely on moments and trying to make something happen quickly, and that obviously has been one of the real strengths of Dupont over the course of the last number of years with both Toulouse and with France. So I think it will be different with Maxime. I don't think he will try and be Dupont. I think he will play his own game, but you're absolutely right. He has some similar strengths. I think his overall game is incredibly rounded. Defensively, very, very strong. Very, very strong defensive brain. Organisation-wise, very, very good. Behind it all, he's a terrific team person as well. You know, as I said, his captaincy and leadership for us here at UBB has been absolutely first rate.
Do you think that Mathieu Jalibert will have to curb his attacking instincts a little with France? I mean, you give him free rein. He's very good on the gain line. Great footwork, great acceleration, a beautifully varied kicking game, great range of passing. And France are, as you rightly point out, France are a little bit more kick orientated, particularly in their own half. Whereas when I watch Mathieu play for you, he's like a lightning rod in attack at times.
Yeah, I think there obviously will be a little bit of difference. And, you know, the argument will be that there's a difference between international rugby and the top 14 or the Champions Cup. So it's difficult to say. Obviously, there is a change in the French coaching setup. Laurent Labie has left. Patrick Alterez has come in from Perpignan. So it will be interesting to see if there are some variances in terms of how they play or if they stick with the similar template that they've had over the course of the last number of years. But I think the one thing about Mathieu is his ability to see space is remarkable, really. His ability to see it and then have the ability to attack it quickly. You know, he sees pictures, he processes them incredibly quickly. And, you know, even as simple as defenders, yeah, just making mistakes, you know, and that's probably the key in the modern game, isn't it? Like, you know, defensive organisation has got so good. Tackle completion rates are so high. Defensive organisation, as I mentioned, line speed, obviously, the pressure on players to make decisions quickly. I think that's the single biggest point of difference that Mathieu has, his ability to process things and his ability to make those decisions. So I still think he'll back his instinct, but there probably is a level of maturity coming as well. Whilst it feels like he's been around for a long, long time, yeah, believe it or not, Mathieu Jalibert was eligible to play in the under-26 Nations in 2019. So I remember when the team was announced being delighted that Mathieu wasn't playing and then coming up against Roman Intermac, who absolutely ripped us to pieces. So he's still incredibly young, you know. So I think there's a maturity coming into his game. And I think you're absolutely right, John, in what you say in terms of the lightning rod. But I think he has the ability to manage the game very effectively as well. I do think that that's probably what we will see. I don't think there will be too much risk in their own end, but equally, I think if it's there, he has the ability to take it.
You reminded me there actually about the point about the difference between international rugby and club rugby. I mean, I'm not sure if you've seen all the episodes of the Netflix doc, The Full Contact, but there's that brilliant scene where Sean Edwards says in French,
"Quand nous avons le ballon dans notre camp, kick the f***ing ball. Simple."
I think that sums up more or less what we're talking about there. But in terms of, obviously, you've got plenty of other players in that French back line. I actually listened to an interview you did recently, Noel, where you kind of spoke about someone like Damien Penaud and the superstar that he is, and how, you know, as a coach, there's only so much you can do in terms of teaching someone like that. You just almost need to create a system where he can thrive rather than necessarily overly coach a player like that. But in terms of your own coaching and working with someone like that, what have you learned from him and what he brings to the table?
I stand by what I said there. You know, it's not about teaching him, you know, that you hear all these, you got to run straight. So like, did you tell Damien, you got to run straight, you can't run across the pitch? You know, how many times have we seen him run across the pitch, and all of a sudden he, I don't know how many times I've been sitting there thinking, what are you doing? Ah, bravo, well done. There certainly is an element of that. So like, what have I learned from him? Ultimately, I've learned that you've got to try and get the best out of each individual player, but you've got to bring them together into some kind of a coherent system. It's not trying to stifle him. I think I use a phrase over here all the time, which is freedom with responsibility. That's what it is for the entire team. It's freedom. It's freedom to play. It's freedom to play the pictures in front of us, but with responsibility that we're making decisions that are in the best interest of the team. I think the other thing as well, like with Damien, is he probably doesn't overthink it. He doesn't get too excited if he scores 4 tries. He doesn't get too caught up in it. If he doesn't score in the game, he doesn't get too caught up in it either. You know, for him, ultimately, it's about doing what he loves doing. And he's a special guy, I suppose, probably the best description for it.
I see that you don't have too many grey hairs, so he mustn't have done too many bad things while you've been watching as a coach. But can you talk to us about Louis Bielbieri and also Nicolas Deporter, who you pointed out to me, and obviously I saw him play for the French under-20s last season, those two as young players, because you have a very successful track record in terms of developing young players. You understand fundamentally and have shown it in terms of coaching in obviously Glenstall and Clongowes and Ireland schools, 19s, 20s, in charge of the Leinster Academy, the value of promoting young players and giving them opportunities, but also giving them skill sets to flourish.
Yeah, and you could probably include Yura Morfana in that group as well, who is actually, yeah. You know, whilst people think that Yurim has been around a long time, he's still only 23, you know, so an incredibly young player. And for me, has arguably been our most effective, consistent performer over the course of the last number of weeks, playing at both 12 and 13 and can do a job on the wing as well. So of those guys that you mentioned, I suppose what I've encountered is just incredibly diligent, hard work, working players who want to get better. That's probably, I don't know whether you want to call it the new generation of French player, but that's certainly what they are. You know, there's still the flair, if you want to call it that, or the ability to express themselves. But, you know, there are lots of similarities with young Irish players and the way they go about their business and understanding the process of getting better as well. So that's probably what I've tried to work with them most is just around that, you know, identifying, yeah, their point of strength, making sure that they look after that and mind that and keep building on that, build on the confidence a little bit, the resilience a little bit to deal with the setbacks as young people, because that's the one guarantee, you know, the one guarantee is that everything is not going to work. Everything is not going to be perfect. You're going to make mistakes. Embracing that and understanding the value of that, I suppose, is probably what I would say, you know. And, you know, from the outset, Nico has been terrific playing at 12 and 13. And obviously he's benefited from having that sprinkling of experience around him. You know, there are other guys in the group as well, someone like Roman Buros at fullback, who is very close to the French national setup. Pablo Alberti is similar. Ben Tapuoi, very experienced, former Australian international, who's won Super Rugby title with the Reds, won the Premiership with Harlequins, and then some more experienced French players as well. So for me, it's embracing all of that and trying to help the younger players to recognize some of the clues that the older guys are leaving behind. It's just ultimately trying to work it out. You know, that's the way I see it. We're trying to work it out together. And it's understanding that, you know, there are things that Gary Ringrose did that helped him to become successful. But you cannot just take that and say, okay, this is the plan. Nico, if you do everything here on this, ultimately you'll play 80 times for France. But for me, you know, someone like Nicholas, Yurim, Louis, you know, they have the ability to be multiple caps for France. You know, you look at their age profile, you look at about how they go about their business, their level of consistent performance. I see no reason why they can't go on and be a significant thorn in everybody's side in the French national team for a number of years to come.
Those two names, Louis Bielbihere and Nicolas Deportaire, raise a really interesting point on the under-20 scene. Obviously, a scene that you know very well from your time coaching Ireland. Mm-hmm. And Nicolas was playing against Ireland in the under-20s World Cup final during the summer. And Louis was playing in the previous Six Nations. So these guys are literally fresh out of the system. And not only are they playing regular top 14, they're in a France Six Nations squad, and it looks like Louis got a really good chance of starting, having started plenty during the World Cup. Other countries don't do that. They don't bring through their talent as quickly. I mean, no, you haven't been in France for very long, but given what you know about the under-20 scene, why do you think they are so good at bringing through these young guys so quickly?
There's some obvious reasons. You know, the most obvious being that there's 14 teams in the top 14 and there's another, you know, layer of outstanding teams in the Pro D2. So that is definitely one of the reasons. You know, and the reality in Ireland is you've got four professional teams and those four professional teams are occupied largely by lots of senior international players. And I think the change in the URC and the fact that there's less overlap between the Six Nations and the URC in many ways has been a little bit detrimental to development of young players and young players getting opportunities. You know, I've long been an advocate of the AIL and the importance of the AIL in terms of developing our young players. But to be honest with you, Nathan, it is as logistically simple as that. There are more opportunities here. Obviously, the French brought in the GIF rule where there was a premium on homegrown developed players, which means basically in every top 14 game, there are penalties if you have too many non-French qualified players. Those reasons probably add up. I think across the board, the physical development has improved. When I was in Ireland, the work of all the academies and sub-academies was certainly getting to a stage where the players were more ready to train and to play professional rugby sooner. But ultimately, it is going to boil down to the opportunities and, you know, finding that balance. There's more games here. You know, the reality in the top 14, there are 26 games. URC, there's, you know, 18 regular season games. You know, I can only speak about the culture at Bordeaux and with Yannick, but there's a really positive mindset and mentality around our young players. I think it's a good player for young players to go to. You know, we've got a very young number eight, Marco Gazzotti, who's a fantastic prospect. I call him Mini Kaelin. There are so many similarities with Kaelin Doris. It's remarkable, really. And, you know, others as well, Pierre Boucheton and so on. So I think that's really what it boils down to, is the opportunities that are here. There's a little bit of it has been created by the French Federation. It does depend a little bit on the club as well, I think, and the culture maybe there with that. And there's talent everywhere. You know, there's no doubt about that. And I saw it in South Africa to a certain degree as well. You know, obviously the Currie Cup, you know, they're trying to find the balance between, I think that Currie Cup will probably transition into a more development, but you're fighting against tradition there, because ultimately the Currie Cup was a competition where senior internationals faced off against each other in massive derbies, and they've got to look at how that looks. And it's similar in New Zealand, you know, the Mitre 10 Cup that I was lucky enough to be involved in for a period, I think is probably moving more towards that model of a development competition where younger players get their opportunity. So ultimately it's about, yeah, the rugby unions having the foresight and the desire to create that environment where their young players can come true, because if they're good enough, they're good enough.
Can we talk to you about your favourite child or children from the 2019 Grand Slam winning side? There's a few of them involved in the Irish squad.
I take massive pleasure in seeing, you know, we can just talk about the hookers in that group. It was obviously a very difficult season for lots of different reasons. But the hookers in that group, Ronan Kelleher, consistent Irish international, Dermot Byrne, who has, you know, gone on and had an excellent career at Munster, and I think probably isn't too far away from being capped. Dan Sheehan, you know, consistent Irish international who has performed week in, week out at the highest level. Owen Clark, you know, obviously went away, went to Munster, went to Jersey Reds, now back in Munster and getting opportunities. And Dylan Tierney-Martin was the fifth hooker that played that year and you know, was having a consistently excellent career with Connacht. So it's a source of great interest and pride for me to see the boys go on and do well and continue to do well. And you know, you look forward to the opportunities to catch up, not just with the guys that play for Ireland, but with all of them at different stages, and enjoy a moment reminiscing on a journey that we shared together. So I think, you know, you look at obviously the likes of Ryan Baird and Craig Casey and Jack Crowley, I think, in this current group. But I'm delighted to see them go well. I think they've got a group of players now that know their story, that know what they're about. I think they've grown an awful lot as a group, and it'll be very exciting to see how they evolve a little bit now and obviously in life after Johnny and seeing, you know, Jack Crowley and Harry were two of the tens obviously that we had with the 20s and see how they bring their personality and their game to the next level. So I look back on that period with enormous fondness, but equally I think we mentioned the Clongos from the very outset. You know, I'll still be in touch with lots of the guys that we were involved in. And that's probably the beauty of it for me, to be honest.
So you'll be able to sit back and relax, watch Matthew Jalibert and Jack Crowley lead their respective teams.
It's a complicated one, isn't it? Yeah, I certainly want I want the French backs to play well. I've loved working with the boys here, you know, we've got a really, really good group. So it's certainly going to be a little bit conflicting watching them. You know, you work day in, day out with people and obviously played a number of games. So I certainly want them to play well. I don't know what the heart is going to say when it really comes down to it, you know, because obviously that's where we're from. But it certainly will be, it will be a fascinating challenge. I think they're two teams that, you know, have a different approach. I think the Marseille piece probably adds another dimension to it. You know, everything that I've heard about Marseille kind of indicates that it's going to be a pretty special atmosphere. I think the Friday night at 9 o'clock adds another layer as well. And then I think that the last piece probably is you've two teams who probably coming off regret, whatever way, you know, the French are certainly talking very openly about it. You know, I think Ireland have probably kind of said that they've moved on and that they're focused on this game on its own merits. But it's going to be absolutely fascinating. And if you can't get excited about this game, then I think rugby's not for you, or sport's not for you, for that matter.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Noel, for your time. Some really interesting insight there. And just wish you all the best for the rest of the season. Thank you for joining us.
No, thanks very much for having me on, guys. And best of luck.
We'll leave it there. My thanks to John, Gordon, and of course, Noel McNamara. We'll be back on Thursday, where we hear from Irish Times rugby correspondent Jerry Thornley, who's at the Ireland training camp in Portugal. Our thanks also to our sponsor, Nifty Business. Subscribe to The Counter Ruck wherever you get your podcasts.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.